Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And we both welcome you back to another jam-packed and important episode of The New World Next Week, which, of course, you can find everything you need, high-quality, low-quality audio, video, documentation, and more, all at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James will be looking internationally on this New World Next Week, episode 121, where we'll begin from Russia Today, RT.com. U.S. position on Syria directly endorses terrorism. Washington's reaction to blasts in Damascus is a downright justification of terrorism, slams Russian Foreign Minister Sergey Lavrov. U.S. State Department announced that terror acts in Syria are not surprising in light of the Assad regime's actions. Quote, "This is direct endorsement of terrorism. How are we supposed to understand that?" End quote. Sergey Lavrov shared his astonishment at a press conference in Moscow. "This is a sinister position. I cannot find words to express our attitude towards that." Lavrov also expressed his surprise that the UN Security Council refused to condemn acts of terror in Syria. The U.S. permanent representative to the UN, Susan Rice, has stated that terror acts in Damascus contribute to speeding up the adoption of a resolution on Syria, according to the Chapter 7 of the UN statute, which implies harsh sanctions, including resorting to force. In other words, this means we are going to support such acts of terrorism until the UNSC does what we want, Lavrov commented on the U.S. representative's actions. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has said recently that there should be closer work with opposition in Syria as it captures more and more territories to prepare new actions of resistance to the government in Damascus. James, I don't believe that's all Hillary has recently said concerning the Syria situation, is it?
Oh, she said a lot, but who cares? And I don't know who this Lavrov man is, but he sure didn't get his education from the American school of propaganda. Because as we all know, if terrorism is committed on behalf of the U.S. and its interests, then it's not terrorism by definition. It's goodness and holiness and sunshine and rainbows and lollipops. So blowing people up and committing acts of terrorism are great when it's our guys doing it, even if our guys are Al-Qaeda itself, which is most assuredly the case here, exactly as it was in Libya. So no one who is watching this video needs further proof or further illustration of this general point, but here it is. And why don't we take this opportunity to shove it back in the face of those idiots who continue to shove the propaganda down our throats about the war on terror and how evil Assad's regime is, however evil it is, supporting terrorism and blowing up innocent people because it serves your political agenda is terrorism by definition. So eat that to all the Thomas Friedmans and others in this world who would seek to justify what's going on there in this bloodshed by recourse to their political aims and goals.
But we have a responsibility to protect, right?
We have a responsibility to protect the interests of U.S. and Israel and the U.K. and France and every other country that has their finger in this imperialist pie. And unfortunately, that's all that that matters in this geopolitical chess game. So at the very least, you got to thank people like Lavrov for being able to stand up and call the emperor out on being naked.
And we'll include some of the other contextual links to flesh out this story, because James, as on so many levels, they're all around the world, things are accelerating. So it's really tough actually to stay up to date on all of these sources. Fortunately, there is a growing by the day, louder and louder alternative media, where we always note that, you know, the truth just rings true and you can say it once. The propaganda, they have to keep, you know, like Bush said, you know, they got to keep catapulting and repeating it to make it sink in, because it's lies. You have to trick people and brainwash them into it. But there's an alternative media that's blown up, and we'll throw out the link, love, to our good friend Brock in Australia, who also helps out on my own cyberspace war website. He's got a new blog called Asia Pacific Perspective, and this also links back to our friend Michael Vale at stratrisks.com, but goes to The Telegraph originally. Australia's spies active in world's strategic hotspots. Australian Secret Intelligence Service, ASIS, the chief, Nick Warner, gave the first ever public speech by a director general of the 60-year-old overseas spy agency last week. It was a calculated move by the Labour government to politically promote ASIS or ASIS or ASIS, Australia's equivalent of the CIA. Warner said it was time to raise public awareness of ASIS's unique contribution to our foreign policy and security. Totally hidden from public view for decades after it was secretly established in 1952, ASIS is now known to be operating clandestine networks of operatives and local agents in some of the world's most sensitive geostrategic locations. Those include Afghanistan, Pakistan, Indonesia, and more. Warner spoke of a revitalized ASIS reaching a pivotal point in its development. He claimed that ASIS had to further increase its operational capacity because it confronted an operational sphere that was more challenging, volatile, and dangerous than at any time since the service's formation 60 years ago. James?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, let me thank Brock for getting in this and starting his blog, especially on this topic, because Asia-Pacific is going to be the nexus of 21st century geopolitics. So it's important to have this this resource out there. But secondly, on this specific story, ASIS is exactly like CSIS in Canada or CIA in America or MI6 in the UK or any of these other alphabet soup intelligence agencies. It was created completely in secret without the knowledge of the Australian public back in 1952. Behind closed doors in an executive meeting, and was only formalized and brought into legislative reality in, you want to guess what year? Oh yeah, that's right, 2001. So in June 2001, they tabled the legislation that would make it all legitimate. And lo and behold, in October 2001, they were now an official on the books above board organization. What had happened between June and October of 2001? Oh right, 9/11. So of course the war on terror just serving to justify the bringing out and the overt control of these intelligence agencies. And anyone who wants to look into ASIS corruption, I suggest you look at such things as their Papua New Guinea training that they were doing of troops there in the late 80s, training troops to kill independence fighters there, and some of the other ridiculous incidents they've been involved in, a Sheraton Hotel hostage incident that was just absolutely ridiculous, has to be read to believe, be believed. And in 1993, there was a big kerfuffle that came about because of some whistleblowers that came out saying that ASIS was breaking the law regularly, routinely, forcing out agents that wanted to go against it. It resulted in a royal commission, which was, of course, just a royal cover-up, but what else would you expect? But again, this is just another tarnished agency, and it's unfortunately going to have more and more of a role on the central stage of world geopolitics as Australia has more of a role as the Asia-Pacific heats up.
Posted below the main body of this article, again, on the Asia-Pacific Perspective blog, a related story, James, that will set us right off into our third and final story and so very much more. Spy chief warns of cyber warfare, again, concerning the Asia-Pacific perspective. But that's the perspective all around the world. And James, I'll admit, I hadn't really thought about this angle. Of course, essentially everyone's bracing in some way or another for the mega ritual coming this weekend, beginning on the 27th. That's the London 2012 Olympics, the Zio Olympics, if you will. I had not really considered this angle that comes from the Los Angeles Times. London Olympics officials prepare for cyber attacks. As athletes compete for Olympic gold, a different group will seek international recognition: online hackers. Olympic security officials are bracing for an onslaught of cyber assaults that could easily surpass the 12 million attacks a day, or 500,000 an hour, that were logged during the Beijing Olympics 4 years ago. From the hacker's perspective, this is the mother of all opportunities, said Larry Poneman, president of the Poneman Institute, an internet think tank. The London Olympics is particularly vulnerable because it will be the most technologically interconnected, social media-driven event yet, security analysts say. The difference from 4 years ago is that there are a lot more people using the internet, especially through their mobile phones, so says another tech officer from a different consulting firm. The threats could range from hackers trying to put up a message on a scoreboard to more nefarious attempts to disrupt the games by knocking out London's electricity grid. If you had the ability to turn off an event or just to turn off the lights and make people feel uncomfortable or unsafe, that would make quite a powerful statement. London security officials say they are well prepared. More than 3,500 information technology engineers and technicians have been assigned to monitor the game's computer systems and networks. ATOS, A-T-O-S, the IT company that is overseeing computer security for the Olympics, is monitoring more than 11,000 computers and servers from a deployment center. Experts say many of the cyber attacks could come from rogue hacker activist groups, that's right, James, such as Anonymous or LulzSec, whose goals are to draw attention to their political causes. Such groups might try to make, or rather to take, over Olympics-related websites to post political messages or to tamper with the events themselves. And in closing, I'll just mention the quote from, again, one of the tech officials. People are going to be putting out lots of scores and stories through the web. So if you're a cyber activist, that would make a really good target. Imagine if you could take the scoreboard and make it say, "Go Iran." James, you can get it. Why that would be funny. Oh, that's right. Iran's not there. Why is that?
Why is that?
They, I believe, objected to the overt Zionist sheen of this entire mega ritual that's coming from all the just occult symbolism and all the things that we see. We could spend a ton of time, James, just kind of discussing that, and we'll include what I found amazingly, you know, informative and interesting. Red Ice Radio, redicecreations.com, did a full compilation on a lot of different researchers talking about all of the suspicious activity, both occult and otherwise, seeming to lead up to these Olympics. But even if you don't want to go there, what about G4S? We've heard nothing but essentially sketchy things about the main security team. So look back at all the main kind of catalyzing catastrophic events, James, JFK, 9/11, the biggies. The main thing that has to happen is just the removal of the protection that would normally be there. So whether that's making the, you know, letting the windows stay open in Dealey Plaza or having some distracting drill going on in the morning of 9/11, that could really be the key, James.
It certainly could. That's always the key. It's so easy to allow some sort of event to happen, and that's always the ace card up their sleeve. And again, we can't predict it. We don't know what's going to happen or what's not going to happen, but the possibility is always there. And is increasing in this technological climate. All I can say is I would sincerely hope that one day some V for Vendetta type person will be able to hack into the live stream of something like this and inject some real truth into the airwaves. But until such time as that happens, I'm sure the threat of this will be used to somehow take away all of our rights and will be used to monitor all of us even more closely. So really, once again, there's just so much terroraganda floating in the air, especially this weekend. And on that note, of course, with the movie shooting last week, well, it's the 1 week anniversary this week. It's the 1 week occasion, which may be a time of increased copycat preparation, shall we say. I just had Lauren Coleman, Copycat Effect, on my show to talk about that, and he says that 1 week, 2 weeks, and 1 month after such incidents, we tend to see copycat people coming out of the woodwork to do similar things. And interestingly enough, we've already seen the first copycat coming to a theater with Loaded Gun just a few days ago in Maine, in the very same theater where Lauren Coleman himself attended and watched the movie last week. So just more of those bizarre coincidences that float around events like these.
And tie in the UN weapons treaty and all of those things, James, makes for a pretty rough position. Ultimately, though, I have to remember this. This is all a war on our psyche, a war on our consciousness, ultimately. So I'm going to have actually my good friend Clyde Lewis of groundzeromedia.org. He's going to be live on my show Friday morning to discuss, again, James, Aurora and the occult Olympics and what we're looking at.
Excellent. Well, you're right. This is a war for your consciousness. So if you're thinking you are winning, thank you to all of you out there for helping to spread the word about this show and our shows respectively. So, James, I'm looking forward to having you on Corbett Report Radio tonight for Food World Order.
That's right, man. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.